When it comes to air quality, the bad news is that wildfires and air pollution have really degraded the quality of our air. But the good news is that we're all realizing that the quality of our air, and particularly the quality of our indoor air, is really darn important. I'm so excited to tell you about Puro Air because in 30 minutes, this device will remove allergens, dust, smoke, and gases from your room. It uses a stronger type of filter called a HEPA 14, and it filters pollutants at a microscopic level. I keep my Puro Air running upstairs where the bedrooms are all night. I love that it's quiet. Cleaner air just hits different, doesn't it? Check out everything Puro Air has to offer at getpuroair.com. That's GetPuroAir.com. One more time for the people in the back, getpuroair.com. Mother's Day is around the corner, and I have the best gift idea for you. Hold on to your hats. It's mylifeinabook.com. Every week, My Life in a Book will send your mom a question via email. They will compile all of your mom or the mom in your life's answers and create a legacy keepsake book. The book becomes something you and future generations can treasure forever. I gave both my mother and my mother-in-law My Life in a Book, and they've already started responding to the prompts. When my mother-in-law received her first prompt, she said, "Oh my goodness, what a thoughtful gift." And that's what we all want, right? We all want to give thoughtful gifts. So check out mylifeinabook.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day, mylifeinabook.com, and use code SUSTAINABLE for 10% off today. Well, hello there and welcome back. My name is Stephanie Safarian and you are listening to episode 183 of the Sustainable Minimalist Podcast. On today's show, we are making the case for a circular economic model, as opposed to, of course, our linear one, that closes the loop so that nothing is wasted. It's estimated that the transition to circularity around the globe can be achieved by 2030, and it would lead to $4.5 trillion worth of economic growth. If this happens, it could mean the biggest transformation of production and consumption since the first industrial revolution 250 years ago. My guest today is entrepreneur, sustainability expert, and author Ron Gonin. Ron argues that circularity is not just crucial for the planet. Circularity also holds immense business opportunity. And so Ron is here to discuss the major takeaways from his new book called The Waste-Free World: How the Circular Economy Will Take Less, Make More, and Save the Planet. Now, really quick, before we jump into the interview, a quick note for safety's sake that Ron is recording in New York City and there will be sirens on his audio track today. There will be some sirens, there will be some, I don't know, some forklifts. So if you are driving or if you're out for a walk with your headphones on, know that it may very well be this podcast track. Ron, I'm so excited to have you on today. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm so well. The sun is shining here in Massachusetts, so it's a great day. Before we get into your new book, The Waste-Free World, introduce yourself to my listeners. I know you have a quite extensive professional history. Maybe give us your 30-second introduction to Ron Gonin.
Sure. My entire career has been focused on the intersection between maximizing financial returns and social impact. And I've had the opportunity to do that in management consulting as an entrepreneur, as a government official, and now someone who runs an investment firm. More specifically, prior to starting Closed Loop Partners, the investment firm I currently run in 2014. I was the Deputy Commissioner for Sanitation, Recycling, and Sustainability in the Bloomberg administration. I was a role created for me by the mayor to be able to come in and reimagine and rebuild New York City's sanitation department with a focus on recycling and circular economy. And prior to that, I served as an adjunct professor at Columbia Business School. I've founded two companies, one in the recycling industry, one in the solar space. And very early on out of college, worked in management consulting. So that's a little bit of my professional background. On a personal note, I live on the Upper West Side of New York City with my wife and two kids.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned your role in Mayor Bloomberg's administration. I'm definitely going to ask you about your experience. Maybe a better word would be fight to get styrofoam banned in the city. We'll talk about that later. But before we talk about circularity and how on earth a circular economy could potentially be feasible, you do mention in the book that consumers, you and I and everybody who buys stuff, we're not benefiting from a single-use society because we're paying for the disposal of these single-use products. Can you break that down for me a little bit more?
Sure. Unfortunately, for the past 50 years, there's been a hoax that's been perpetuated and perpetrated on us as citizens, which is the following. You can buy a product, and if it's either not recyclable or you don't want to recycle it, no problem, just put it in the garbage and it disappears. And there's no financial consequence to you or your home. And then you can just go to the store and keep buying more stuff. And then if you do want to recycle, you should maybe feel good about yourself because it's the right thing to do, but there's no connection to it having any financial benefit for you or your household. And in fact, even though recycling, yes, you should feel good about it, it may actually cost you money or cost your community money. And that is a hoax. In reality, what takes place is whatever you don't put in your recycling container or whatever can't be recycled and your municipality needs to pick up in the garbage, it has to go to the landfill. And the transportation to the landfill and the disposal of that trash in a landfill is paid for by taxpayer dollars that are hidden in our tax bill. And this concept that waste just disappears or it's managed at no cost to us is a hoax, and it's a concept directly connected to billions in tax dollars that we're paying every year that's kind of hidden and buried in our tax bill.
That's so interesting. We are literally paying for the disposal of our single-use products. I never thought of it in that way before, but it makes total sense.
I would say, to even be more specific, like in New York City, we spend about $400 million a year disposing of waste in landfills located in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and South Carolina. Fortunately, in the Bloomberg administration, we built the most robust recycling infrastructure in the United States. And so that number continues to come down, and it came way down in the Bloomberg administration. But in New York City, there's still hundreds of thousands of tons that get sent to landfill every year. And if you look at the United States, it's in the billions of dollars of taxpayer money that's spent every year putting material in landfill. And that's money that could go back to taxpayers in the form of a tax cut. It could be used for teachers, police, fire, to build infrastructure. Instead, it's literally just tax money being used to throw products and packaging in a hole.
One aspect to your book, Waste Free World, that really fascinated me was the fact that you outlined how the notion of single-use disposable product and packaging was was marketed to us. It was in the form of advertising campaigns. And you argue that now, these days in 2021, we are hooked on the throwaway economy. What do you mean by this?
Sure. So that gets back to what I was talking about earlier regarding a hoax. And so one of the things that I discuss in the book is that if you look at marketing and advertising pre-1950 in the United States, it was focused on two concepts. First, it was focused on quality over quantity. There was no concept of status being associated with how much stuff you had. Status was really associated with the quality of the product you were buying, the quality of your clothes, the material that was being used to make your clothes, the quality of a piece of machinery you were buying or an appliance, that it was high quality and it was going to last. That's what was marketed to us as the highest form of status. And the other thing that was marketed to us was that recycling was a patriotic duty, because at the time, the extraction of natural resources was incredibly expensive. And it came from parts of the world where it's politically unstable, or we had no relationships. And so recycling was a way for our country to grow its economy in a cost-effective way. You continually reuse these resources. So those were the two messages that we got pre-1950 in the United States. Quality is the highest form of status, not quantity, not how much stuff you buy, and that recycling is a patriotic duty. Post-1950, what we began to be marketed was status is that quantity is the highest form of status. The more things you could buy is how society would determine whether or not you were successful. And that recycling was something that was no longer necessary. You could just buy all this stuff and get rid of it. And this marketing wasn't derived because that's the best way for our economy to function, or is the best thing for the environment, or the best thing for the community, or actually the best thing for our families emotionally or psychologically. That marketing came from a nefarious way for certain industries to convince us to buy more of their products without their having to be responsible for what happens to it at the end of its life.
So your argument then is that the solution to the single-use disposable problem would be a closed loop or a circular economy. Before we get into like how on earth we could transition from a linear one to a circular one, define the concept of circularity for my listeners, for somebody who's never heard of that before.
In defining a circular economy, let me just take a moment and define a linear economy, which is what we operate under today. A linear economy is where, in order to manufacture a product, you first have to extract a natural resource, petroleum for plastic, ore for metal, timber for paper products. You then design products to use that commodity one time. And once that product has been used that one time, it's then supposed to be disposed of in a landfill. Sometimes it gets left in nature, unfortunately. And then you start that process over again. And that type of process has a lot of embedded costs. Every time you buy something, you're paying the cost of extraction of the natural resource. And then you're also paying for the disposal of it in a landfill. And that linear system was designed to be in the best financial interest of the extractive industries, oil and gas, mining, and the landfill industry. It wasn't designed to be in the best interest of us as consumers or citizens or our communities. So what's the alternative? How do we fix that? We fix that by building what we call a closed loop system or a circular economy, where you're using material science to develop new types of materials in a lab that don't require natural resource extraction. You're investing in product design to design products that can be fixed, refurbished, or recycled. You're designing advanced collection and recycling systems to be able to collect these products and either recycle them into new products or be able to refurbish them and get them out into the market, with the goal of no longer having to extract natural resources for the manufacturing of products or dispose of those products in a landfill. And that type of circular system will protect our natural resources and improve our environment. It will also significantly reduce costs in the system for consumers and taxpayers.
Yeah, the concept of circularity has obvious benefits for our planet that you so aptly laid out. And you touched on the fact that consumers will also benefit with regard to reduced cost and perhaps, hopefully, even better quality products. Are there any other ways in which everyone can profit from a circular economy? Like, what else can we all get from it?
Well, the benefits are there are multiple benefits of the circular economy. So the most obvious ones are you're going to reduce cost in the system because you're reducing extraction costs of natural resources. You're developing supply chains that no longer have waste in them. And you're avoiding the cost of landfill disposal. So those are the most obvious economic benefits. There's other economic benefits that come along with that. First and foremost are a lot of local jobs that get created. The recycling industry in the United States already employs hundreds of thousands of people. But you have large parts of the United States where there is no recycling infrastructure. There is no manufacturing infrastructure that can take recycled commodities and turn them into new products. And so if we stop relying on the extraction of natural resources in politically unstable parts of the world that then need to be shipped to another part of the world to be manufactured into a product that then shipped to the United States, and instead focus on how do we use advanced material science and product design and recycling systems to develop materials in the United States, manufacture them in the United States, collect them after they're used in the United States and turn them back into products in the United States, we're actually going to create a very, very robust local and resilient economy.
I want to shift gears after the break and talk to you about how on earth we can replace our linear economy with a circular one after a quick word from this week's sponsor. The Sustainable Minimalist Podcast is supported by Real Paper. The average American family uses 3 rolls of toilet paper per week, but there are big problems with conventional paper. Before it was toilet paper, it was a tree. And standing trees are cut down for our wiping needs every single day. Enter Real Paper, which offers a 100% bamboo solution. I appreciate that Real Paper is strong yet soft. And I also love that an entire month's supply arrives at my doorstep in completely plastic-free packaging. And as an intentional consumer, I feel good knowing that every roll of Real Paper purchased helps fund access to clean toilets for those in need. Ordering is as easy as heading to realpaper.com, choosing how often you want your tree-free toilet paper delivered, and entering code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 25% off your first order. That's reelpaper.com, and be sure to use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 25% off. And we're back with Ron Gonin, author of the new book, Waste-Free World, How the Circular Economy Will Take Less, Make More, and Save the Planet. Ron, I really want to talk to you about the probability of circularity taking over. And the single most impactful part of your book for me was when you discussed your years-long fight, years, multiple years of fighting when you were New York City's deputy commissioner for sanitation, and you were fighting with the DART Container Corporation as you and Mayor Bloomberg and the administration sought to ban the sale of styrofoam in the city. You encountered, and I don't even think I have them all listed here, but you encountered disinformation campaigns, the creation of lobbying alliances. There were court battles over years. And I'm saying all this because I'm curious. If you encountered all this to ban just one disposable product in just one American city, a major city, but just one city, is the concept of the circular economy actually feasible in the large scale?
Yes. At the end of the day, although we had to deal with a number of disinformation campaigns, and so it was a challenging experience, but the net result is that we banned styrofoam in New York City. And so we were able to be successful in that. And I think every time you, in a progressive movement, win a major battle like that, especially in a place as large as New York City, it makes the future battles easier. And I was glad to have the opportunity in my life to be part of that movement in New York City to ban styrofoam. And so I'm very optimistic about the development of a circular economy for one important reason. Major companies are starting to recognize that a circular economy will reduce costs and increase margins for them. I think sometimes movements end up reaching a tipping point for different reasons than what you thought would cause the tipping point. And that's okay. That's okay. Whatever it takes to trigger that tipping point is less relevant than the tipping point actually being achieved. So I'm very optimistic about the growth of circular economy. And we at Closed Loop Partners are investing in and have invested in some really breakthrough technologies and super innovative companies that are doing great and scaling. And I cover a number of those companies in the book.
You do a great job of covering a lot of very innovative companies doing circularity right in your book. And as the host of this podcast, I have been fortunate to interview some really forward-thinking CEOs and founders of companies who buy into the notion of circularity. But I can imagine that those in power in the fossil fuels industry, the oil and gas industry, they are not a fan of circularity, and they have immense financial power to fight back. Do you have any thoughts on this essentially David and Goliath battle of the little guys against these big major players who have been so powerful for so long?
I think the cause of the tipping point that I mentioned a few minutes ago in terms of major consumer goods companies recognizing that a circular economy will actually reduce costs and increase margins for them, along with helping them achieve their environmental goals, pushing off regulation, meeting the interests of certain consumers. But at the core, I think they're actually recognizing that a circular economy will reduce costs. There's this interesting phenomenon, I think, that takes place in our economy where a lot of consumers think that Coke and PepsiCo and P&G and Unilever and Nestle are packaging companies or in the plastics business. They're not. They don't own any packaging companies. They don't own any plastic companies. They're in the product delivery business. And they're more than happy to sell you their product without the packaging. A packaging is cost for them. And they're starting to recognize that. And so they're starting to try to innovate to meet consumer demand of less packaging, more sustainable packaging, because really at the heart of it, it's actually a recognition of their own self-interest in doing that, which is they can increase margins. And then there's obviously the additional benefits that they're also trying to achieve of meeting their environmental goals. And there are certain consumer segments that are very interested in this. That movement among major consumer goods companies is influencing this tipping point, because now you don't have the major chemical companies versus just the Greenpeace or the NRDCs of the world or local environmental advocates. Now it's those chemical companies versus some very large consumer goods companies that are as influential or even more influential, who are trying to change their business models. And that's one of the reasons why they're really the leaders of the tipping point. Now, the other interesting phenomenon that's taking place in the chemicals space as it relates to plastic is you're seeing a major split where there's some chemical companies that are saying there's a new world order. We need to listen to what the Unilevers and the P&Gs and the Cokes and the Pepsis and the Nestles are asking for. They're asking for base materials that do not involve the extraction of natural resources. We either need to innovate and figure out ways to provide our customer with that, or we're going to lose our customer. And then you have other companies in the chemical space that are fighting tooth and nail to maintain this legacy and antiquated business model. And so there's a lot of change upon us, and it makes for a very exciting time, and a time in which I think we'll look back on as really the beginning of the tipping point.
You're right. This is an exciting time. It's a new time. And I know my listeners would love to help support this transition, but they likely don't know where to start or how to help. Do you have any ideas for the average listener listening right now who wants to support circularity?
Sure. I'll provide a couple of opportunities. One on just the everyday household product level, and then at a more policy focused level. So first on the household level, there's a number of products available now on the market that the more you engage with those products, the more they're able to grow and be profitable and be successful. And it becomes self-evident to the general business community that this is the way you need to behave. So a couple of those that have been on the market for a while and are doing really well and continuing to grow is, you know, Seventh Generation is a great example of a product that is always innovating to use more sustainable materials, more recycled content, always being transparent about the types of materials they're using in the actual product they're selling you. So really taking the time to find the products that are leaders and using your dollars to support those companies. On a more policy-related level is I would be asking your local officials, and this starts at city council. It starts at, you know, the mayor level. It goes to the governor, goes to your congressperson, goes to your senator, of asking, how much are we spending on landfills every year? And what are we doing to fix that? And that will get the attention of your local political leaders to start looking into this issue of how much money are we spending on landfills and who's it going to, and how can we avoid that cost? We can avoid that cost by investing in recycling infrastructure. And we can begin to include the economic value of recycling and circular economy in the policy and political discussions around a more sustainable lifestyle.
What I hear you saying with all of those suggestions, and thank you for them, by the way, they were all excellent. But what I hear you saying is that it's on us, it's on me, it's on definitely you, it's on my listeners to rattle the cage. Instead of continuing to do what we've always done, buying the products we've always bought, sitting back at the city council meeting and not raising our hands, it's on us to rattle the cage and shout from the rooftops, perhaps, that we're interested in a different and better way. Is that essentially what you're saying?
It's all of the above. Some of us can have a lot of influence because maybe we are in a household with a large family, and there your purchasing power has impact. Some of us are retirees who are living at home by ourselves and maybe have some free time and can actually show up at city council meetings and say, I have a question. I want to understand, why are we spending all of this money on landfills? Shouldn't we be finding ways to invest in recycling programs or local companies that can buy recycled content and manufacture? So there's something in there for everybody in terms of how you can have impact. The other way you can have impact is in the conversations you have with people. So I will tell you that I've had many experiences, especially when I was working in the Bloomberg administration, where, you know, most people think of New York City as an ultra progressive liberal city. There are pockets of conservative neighborhoods in New York, most notably in Staten Island. And I've had a number of experiences of being in Staten Island. You know, someone comes up to me while I'm helping roll out some program or I'm giving some talk, and they point their finger at my chest and tell me about what they had heard, you know, from Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity, you know, the night before, about how these liberals are spending all of this money with these environmental programs, and Bloomberg is trying to do this nanny state. And I let them, you know, go through their litany of complaints And once they're finished with all that, I tell them, this is actually your choice. There's no mandate that, you know, if you don't recycle or you don't compost that we're going to fine you or do anything punitive to you. It's totally your choice. I just want you to understand that when you don't recycle or you don't participate in the curbside organics program, we need to take your tax dollars as well as your neighbor's tax dollars and use it to take that material to a landfill someplace in Pennsylvania, South Carolina, or Ohio. It's really your choice as to whether or not you want to be somebody in your neighborhood who helps your household and your neighbors reduce our tax burden, or you want to be somebody who expects their neighbors to pay for you to throw a bunch of stuff away. It's really your choice. And you can start to see the gears in that person's head start churning of like, wait, I don't want to be branded as somebody who is just being lazy and throwing a bunch of stuff away, and then I expect my neighbors to pay for all of it. And so sometimes you can have a lot of difference, make a big difference by just finding people in your community who maybe today think differently or are getting information from different places, and find a way to communicate progressive and sustainable values in a way that ties into their self-interest and get them to change.
Well, all I have to say is I would love to be a fly in Staten Island during those conversations. That would be something I'd love to observe but not participate in.
You know, if some documentarian would have been following me around during that time, it would have made for a humorous and moving account of changing people's behavior and outlook as it relates to the environment. So, but a great learning experience and growth experience for me.
Well, Ron, tell my listeners where they can find your new book that just came out, I believe last week, was it? The Waste-Free World.
Sure. So The Waste-Free World is available any place you would ordinarily shop for a book. So you can buy it at Amazon or Walmart or Target or Barnes & Noble. But it's also available at most of the major local booksellers as well, if that's of interest to you, to shop with some of the local booksellers. So generally, wherever you typically buy your books, The Waste-Free World is available there. And I hope people find it both informative and an entertaining read. And I look forward to hearing people's feedback as well about the book.
Well, quick plug for The Waste-Free World. It was definitely informative. Every page I'm like highlighting, my whole copy's highlighted. So thank you for sending me a copy. And thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing both your wisdom and your experience. I really appreciate it.
It was great to speak with you today.
I so hope you enjoyed my interview with Ron Gonen. Quick reminder, this week's show notes are at mamaminimalist.com/183. And I am waiting for your questions. So go ahead, call my voicemail, leave me a question, and then I will do my absolute best to answer it on air. All the instructions that you need to be able to do that are in this week's show notes. One more time, mamaminimalist.com/183. On next week's show, we are discussing the long-term effects of the COVID-19 pandemic on disposability. I will see you then. Have an amazing week and take care.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.